Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. This episode is made possible by our sponsor, CSU Ramzone, powered by the CSU Bookstore, a great sponsor of our Pick'em and Bracket Contest all year long, and Ginger & Baker, our favorite restaurant on the planet, and of course, Peterson Toyota, our title sponsor of the podcast. This March, unleash the power of the 2024 Toyota Tundra iForce Max with Peterson's exclusive offer of 2.25% APR for 48 months. This is a great chance to conquer the road with an unbeatable deal. Visit Peterson today for a test drive. You can also experience hassle-free car shopping with SmartPath, which makes it easy for you to find the ideal vehicle tailored to your preferences. Explore flexible financing and choose a payment plan that aligns perfectly with your budget. Check out the SmartPath experience today and embark on your journey to find your dream Toyota. Peterson Toyota has a large selection as well as certified pre-owned vehicles. Whatever you're looking for, Peterson Toyota has something for you, all at competitive pricing and financing. If you're in the market for a new used vehicle, please give Peterson Toyota first shot at your business. Thanks. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Ram Nation Radio. I'm Joel Cantalamessa with Mike Rowe. In a few minutes, we'll also be bringing in interim CSU Athletic Director John Weber, his first appearance with us since being named the interim athletic director. Look forward to catching up with him and seeing what's on the horizon. I wanted to first start off with the experience in Charlotte. Man, very, very disappointing showing, mostly just in the performance. I could have taken a loss, but that was as bad as it gets, really. You know, you feel like you get this anger in your head. Like, I just made this effort to get here, right? I couldn't go to the Dayton event. That was too much turnaround. I had other conflicts. So I said, all right, if they win that game, I'm going to Charlotte. You book your flight for the very next day. You're spending a lot of money. You book your, get your hotel set up and you arrange everything on a day's notice. And you get there and the team just did not show up. I mean, they took an 8-2 lead over the first 5 minutes and then score 3 points in the rest of the half. A Joe Palmer three. I mean, 11 points in the half. And that's the second time that's happened this year. They did it in the second half against San Diego State a month or so ago. But that was just unreal on the big stage to have that happen. It was really bad basketball. Yes, they played great defense. The offense, man, what has happened to the beautiful offense that team had going under Nico Medved earlier in the year? But really nobody stepped up shooting the ball. Team battled in the second half, but you just can't give up a 16-point deficit in the first half. You shoot 18%, 18.5% from the field in the first half. You shoot only 29% for the game. You are so excited for this game. You wait and wait. You wait years for these opportunities, right, as a fan. And we had 5 minutes of entertainment, 5 minutes of really getting into the game and being able to cheer. Other than that, it was pretty futile. So I know that a lot of people were disappointed, the meltdown on social media, meltdown on Ram Nation. But for me, I mean, yes, and I had my own meltdown, right? And I was pretty fed up myself Thursday, all day long, all night, next day. And we decided to cancel the next 2 days in Charlotte and come back home. It kind of ruins your whole mood when something like that happens. But, you know, you look at it at the end of the day, it's about perspective. This was a way better season than we've had in many years. I went back and forth on our message board just yesterday with one of our longtime users. He didn't seem too happy with the season or the job that Nico has done here. But consider that Nico inherited a 12-20 team his first year, had a bad culture. He had to push some guys out. He proceeded to win 20 games over four of the next in 4 of the next 6 seasons. CSU has won 20 games in a season just 13 times in 123 years. So 4 of those came in the last 6 years under Nico. He's got 2 of the of CSU's 12 total NCAA tournament appearances in history and earned 1 of CSU's 5 ever tournament wins. So you got to keep some sort of perspective. And this particular poster, Lofaz, on the board, he tried to equate Nico with Bobo, which I think is just asinine. Bobo finished his tenure here with 7 total wins in his final 2 seasons. That followed up his 3 7-6 seasons that really had no wins of any significance. There was only like 3 rivalry wins in there. He didn't win any of those bowl games. And that was in an era when, and still is an era, that where 64% of the teams make a bowl game. In college basketball, only 19% of college basketball programs make the NCAA tournament. And take half of that for the teams that actually win a game in the tournament, it's 9.5%. So Nico's gotten there twice. He has an NIT Final Four in another one of his other years. And he also has an NCAA tournament win this year under his belt. So for him to, for Lofaz to say that I'm okay with not winning championships and not winning on the big stage. Mike, thanks for being here. You saw how pissed I was Thursday. It ruined my trip. I told you, I don't ever want to travel to see CSU play again. I'm just kind of fed up with losing on that stage and making the effort to travel and then to watch that. So I know you were kind of in the same boat. You have a better perspective than me, but it was a tough performance and a tough way to end your season, but in the grand scheme, a pretty solid year.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously you go someplace, you bust your ass to get there, changing flights, getting rooms last second, and to come out and lay an egg, yeah, that sucks, you know. But like you said, the grand scheme of things, I mean, we had a great season. I mean, we beat some big teams. You know, we're state champs. I mean, I don't think people realize, like, we beat every team in the state. And it doesn't matter, I mean, from CSU Pueblo to CU Boulder, like, we beat them. And that's a big deal. We destroyed Gonzaga. Or, sorry, Creighton. We beat Washington. We beat Boston College. Name the last time that CSU beat teams like that. You know, that's something that just doesn't happen often. And we did that. And again, yeah, it sucked. It sucked losing last Thursday. It took a lot of enjoyment out of that trip. I mean, it was a fun ride. I mean, there's a lot of fun this year. You know, we talked about it last week. Over the last 30 years, there hasn't been a lot of those. There hasn't been a lot of those moments for CSU basketball.
Yeah. Look at it next year. I mean, I actually don't have the heart to go back and look at the game. We know how ugly it was. Nobody could make a shot. You give them credit. They battled back in the second half a little bit. They didn't give up. They played solid defense. Gives you a chance to hang in games. But, you know, it felt like as futile as Virginia was against us 2 nights prior. I mean, we just couldn't make anything. But going into next season, you got, you know, if you want to have a chance to compete for the Mountain West title and have any sort of chance to get back to the tourney, you know, there's a lot of work to be done this offseason. And it's going to be the first time in 6 years not having Isaiah Stevens, which is going to be bizarre, weird. And you probably won't ever see a guy like that again here with that kind of talent who stays for 4 or 5 years without transferring or going to the NBA. You know, so you look at the heir apparent, which may be an unfair label, but Kyan Evans is going to have to be ready for that full-time role to replace Zay, you know, barring them bringing in a transfer. And he's going to have to kind of grow up pretty quick. He didn't get, you know, he had a great opportunity to learn under Zay. And that's a huge plus, but didn't get a lot of, you know, court time. Did a little bit earlier in the season, but he's going to have to step up real quick early next year for the Rams to have any sort of chance.
You know, I talked to Steve Sewell about this, you know, early in the season back in December. I'm actually kind of excited about next year's team. I think that we got a lot of pieces. We need some more. Don't get me wrong. We need some more, but you know, I think that we have some pieces that will make for a very exciting, a very fast-paced team. Now, we saw KC at times too much, especially in Mountain West play, where he seemed to be going way too fast for himself and just didn't have control, of the offense. Tavy, we didn't see anything from him until the Mountain West play, which really leads me to believe that this is somebody who was suffering from injuries, suffering from illnesses. We saw what he could do last year as a freshman. I liked what I saw from him, especially defensively in Mountain West, the Mountain West tournament, and the last week against Virginia and Texas in the spot minutes that he had. Neek's coming back, unless obviously he's guaranteed a draft spot in the NBA, which he might. I mean, he's a dynamic player. We saw last Tuesday against Virginia what he can do on a bigger scale. And we got Mimba. That gives you, and we got Jalen Lake, possibly the greatest Ram ever when he's hitting threes. a little inside
joke.
Who we know what he's done. And the thing that I guarantee people don't realize this, he has played a major role in two of our tournament appearances. He got a lot of time as a freshman in 22, and we saw a first man off the bench this year. You know, those four, those five, I think are solid building piece. We got these four incoming freshmen. I think two of them will probably be getting some major time, especially with their length and their size. And the way that Medved, or the way that Ali have really hit, whether it's the D2 ranks or, really, we've had more success at the D2 ranks with Chandler Jacobs, Tardier, and Joel Scott, that you can expect that we're going to be getting some of those players like that in. Maybe that kid out of Grand Junction that's out at Mesa. Maybe that 6'9 kid coming in, D2 kid that really can step in, that has that experience now playing and could be a big role for us next year. But I do like the pieces that we have, and I think that the cupboard isn't bare. This isn't like when Nico came in 2018. You know, this is a team that will have five guys coming back with major minutes that just won an NCAA tournament game, just played two games in the tournament, made a good run in the Mountain West tournament. Hey, I like next year. I'm not saying that we're going to be better than we were this year, but I don't think we're going to be that bad.
Sure would help to get Neek back. His dad has said that he'll test the NBA waters and see how that goes. But if he doesn't feel like he's a guaranteed draft pick, that he'll come back to CSU and won't go to the transfer portal, kind of wants that continuity. That's obviously assuming the coaching staff stays intact. You lose Joel Scott, Josiah Strong, Pat Cartier, Joe Palmer. You could potentially lose guys like Javonte Johnson, Kyle Evans, Jack Payne, although nobody has entered the portal yet. All three of those guys played pretty sparingly this year. You could even lose a guy named Tavy, which I would hate. You mentioned him and his ability, and I think he would play a much larger role next season and be a key guy. But whoever that of that batch comes back needs to really step up, take their game to the next level. You mentioned Bemba. I think he could be a really, really good player, kind of take over that role from Joel Scott that Joel had filled a void there, and now Bemba can fill the void left by Joel. And you mentioned Jalen Lake, great defender, a little bit inconsistent in his shot. Part of the reason kind of the team's decline the latter part of the season, our wings just didn't give you a lot of scoring output, but nice to have that piece back. If he can get that shooting groove back for sure, that would help. You see a guy like Petratus from Air Force in the portal. I know Swole has been a proponent of this, but man, I could use a shooter like that on this roster. And that would be a nice pickup in the portal. CSU has had success picking up guys from the lower levels, Chandler Jacobs, Joel Scott, Pat Cartier, Joe Palmer. I mean, Jacobs and Scott particularly were huge pickups. Pat had some really good play at times too. Getting one of those kind of players this year would be big. All right. And one more big question is, will Nico be back, Mike? I mean, you dodge a bullet with West Virginia. People were saying they don't think he was going to leave for West Virginia. In fact, Amy Parsons kind of told me she didn't think he would necessarily leave for West Virginia, but You and I both heard all the stuff when we were in Charlotte, some from some connected folks out there that said if he got the offer, he was going to be gone. West Virginia would have paid him probably roughly $3 million. That's three times what he'd make here. I think Amy Parsons would be willing to bump him up. Maybe 1.5 was kind of a number we heard we might be able to go to. That's still half, you know, it's half of what a P5 could give him, a minimum of half. And his wife's from there. His parents still live there. Dad's a West Virginia booster. They got married in Morgantown. I think the things were aligned that, man, if they came calling, I think we were in trouble. And now you see his name popping up with Oklahoma State. So these people on our board saying, no one's going to hire a guy who can't win championships and NCAA tournament games. You're wrong. There's a lot of smoke.
I wouldn't know that because I muted half the board yesterday. So I'll tell you what, these last 2 days have been extremely enjoyable on the board.
I can't do that. I can't mute anybody because I got to be able to know when someone's popping off. So
you need to come up with your sleepy Joel.
Sleepy Joel.
Your best friend.
It's going to be my alter ego. Well,
sorry. You know, we dodged two bullets. I mean, I didn't think that he was that far with Michigan, but it really looked like that was a strong possibility. Like, I was kind of shocked that, you know, who was it? The Drake coach got it. Who got the Michigan job? The FAU coach.
Dusty May.
He'll get fired in 3 years anyway.
It doesn't matter.
But, I'm really shocked. I mean, obviously, if the FAU coach took it, that means that Nico was would have been in heavy consideration for that job. And then, you know, obviously, we just talked about West Virginia. Thought we dodged those two bullets. Oklahoma State, I don't see him taking that, mainly along the lines that I don't think that they support basketball. You know, you're going to be in the Big 12 in arguably the best college basketball conference. And if you're not competing, especially in the NIL and with your facilities, then you're not going to stay up with Kansas, Iowa State, Houston, hell, even BYU, K-State, CU, Utah, who's been pouring money into their programs, Arizona State. I mean, I just rattled off 10 teams right there that, man, if you're not investing, you're not going to be competing with those teams. So you might get a quick bag, but again, you're going to be like Timmy coaching San Jose State in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing, and I'll ask John about this, but I started looking at this that, if Nico went to an Oklahoma State, they're going to have a way bigger NIL bag to share amongst their players. But then I read a quote from their coach that just got fired, Mike Boynton. He said that they spent barely over $500,000 in total NIL money to their basketball players this year. I think we've spent more than that, right? So, but you do know if they get a new coach in there, they get some momentum, they'll fill that collective with money. They got some big time boosters. There is T Boone Pickens still alive? I don't think he is, but there's still money down there and they could fund that. But anyway, so maybe the grass isn't greener in that particular circumstance, but the fact that his name is out there, you know, it's not a given that he's going to be back next year. You never know what can happen. A couple more comments.
I think it's definitely something that we need to, as fans, we need to prepare ourselves either this year or next year. I think it's going to be coming, you know, sooner rather than later with him. You know, it would be awesome if he was able to turn this into the next Gonzaga or San Diego State. But you know what? You look at all those, they had the guy that took them to the guy where they got all the success. And so maybe he's that guy or maybe he really does stay. You know, I think we're in a pretty good situation. I think Ali would be ready to step in as the head coach if there is a change, if Nico does leave. Or I think we'd be in an attractive enough position to get a really good coach, you know, to take over.
Well, and our boy Kevin Lytle said that he believes that one of the two, you know, if Nico stays, Ali's probably going to be gone. Ali's ready for a head coaching job. Sounds like he's had opportunities there. So you don't. If Nico stays here this year, will Ali still be here? So, by the way, great to see Kevin Lytle and Justin Michael coming out of the elevator, coming up to the elevator. We were going out late night on, what was that, Wednesday night?
I don't even know. I've been freaking on airplanes nonstop since Wednesday. Barely know what state I'm in right now.
Yep. Well, incoming recruits for Hoops. You got center Kyle Jorgensen, a 6'9", 205, put some weight on there, big guy. But for Minneapolis, you got a strong forward, Jonathan Mekinen. That's a hockey name, isn't it? 6'7", 185. Well, he's from St. Paul, Minnesota, so he probably did play hockey too. Jaden Step, is it Step? Steppy? Step? He's the guy that a lot of people think is going to play right away, kind of step right in and give you some good minutes. He's from just south of Portland. And then you got guard Darnez Slater, 6'4", 180. He's from near Riverside, California. But so I think you're going to probably see a guy or two from the portal, hopefully some impact players. It's going to be a busy busy few months here coming up for the Hoops coaches.
St. Thomas from UNC just entered the portal. So, hey, you guys talked a lot about him on the message boards. You guys talking a lot of crap about how we didn't get Kendrick, you know, last year from UNC. Step up with the NIL if you want St. Thomas. Show it.
Yep. Couple local guys who would look pretty good in a Ram uniform in the portal. So, well, Mountain West performance, probably not as good as we wanted to in the tourney. Get six teams in. I think people threw some barbs at the conference. They probably deserve it. They'll get continue to get called out until they start winning more in the tournament. Boise losing the opener.
Three teams won three games. Boise choked. Nevada choked.
Nevada was a choke. And that's it. I mean, Boise, though, I mean, they ran into a very hot CU team. It's playing very well.
You're up four with a minute and a half. You got to finish that off. Win.
They choked. They were up four, exactly. And they had a turnover. Oh, God, that was frustrating. We're watching that freaking getting off the
plane. On your phone.
Yeah. In the taxi, and then right before CSU's tip off, we're kind of watching on the big screen. They're showing the end of the Nevada game, and they freaking blow an 18-point lead with 7 minutes left to Dayton. That's just a killer, man. That is a killer. Those are two teams that had really good years, they're really good rosters, and they were set up to win a couple games. Just had enough talent to win a couple games in the tournament. So those two right there were brutal. And that just was a dagger right before the start of the CSU game for me. I was like, geez, here we go again with the Mountain West. And, CSU had a chance to offset those losses a little bit if you can beat Texas. But then we rolled out some garbage there in our game. But,
and New Mexico was outclassed by Clemson. They were.
Yeah.
It was one of those.
Clemson played really well.
Clemson was. And New Mexico, knowing you have to win, you have to perform on four straight nights. I think they just put way too much into the Mountain West tournament, which apparently they had to, looking at the seedings. But I think that they were running on fumes.
Yep. Well, Mountain West has earned four wins this year. Three of the team got wins. Got 10 credits. So what is each credit worth? $2 million? Something like that?
Yep.
That's a nice little chunk for the conference.
Hopefully we can negotiate that when we make the new Pac-12.
Right. San Diego State, once again, carrying the league, advancing the Sweet 16, although, man, they did have their hands full against UAB, but got a pretty nice favorable matchup against Yale in the second round. But they have UConn coming up next, so Mountain West run in the tournament appears to be nearing an end. UConn looks really good.
I want to say one thing. I mean, looking at San Diego State and looking at CSU beating of Virginia, looking at Utah State winning their first round matchup. If we have better seeds across the board, like everybody in the entire world thought we should have, and I'm talking about for the Mountain West, not just for CSU, but I think it looks a lot different. Could have seen us winning five out of six. And I mean, even looking at us, if we're not playing our fifth game in nine nights, I think we beat Texas. And seeing how that Texas-Tennessee game shook out, who knows? I think that we had the talent that we could have beat them as well. Now, again, everyone's like, well, we scored 11 points. Yeah. I know I turned to you at one point and was like, we have no lift in that first half. We couldn't get off the ground on our shots and playing hard, and we played great defense, but
yeah,
just didn't have it. But again, if we have a higher seed, we're not in that situation. We're not playing on a Tuesday night, flying overnight, getting maybe 3 hours of sleep the night before a game. And it is what it is, and no excuses. You still got to make shots. We didn't do that. But,
you know,
I think watching San Diego State getting back to the Sweet 16, and if they can play well, even beat UConn, I think that's going to just carry on next year. I think a lot more people are defeatist about, oh, yeah, you know, four of the teams got knocked out on Thursday, Friday. Three of the teams won games, right? Mm-hmm. Three of the teams won games in the NCAA tournament. And if you're looking at a team that was fifth in the Mountain West that's in the Sweet 16, maybe it is about seeding. And if we can keep doing this, keep showing as a conference, that the next couple of years, I think that we are going to see truer seeds.
Yeah, I mean, obviously playing the playing game takes its toll on you. But overall, I thought that the matchups were very winnable. That's what I'm disappointed about. I think our matchup against Texas was winnable. And it should have been. I mean, if you play, we held them to what, 56 points?
Yeah.
I mean, that is a game you should win if you're CSU, if you're shooting halfway decent. We just were dismal. You know, San Diego State, they were the one team that was seeded well. Nevada, I think maybe they were underseeded a little bit, but you draw Dayton. I mean, come on, Boise, draw CU. I mean, I don't know. They were winnable games. Utah State, I thought, had a tough draw with their eight, and then he destroyed TCU. So I don't know. I don't have a problem with the actual teams, the matchups, but yeah, sure, certainly the two teams getting playing games hurt a little bit.
Yeah, but you know, look at the Big 12, look at the SEC. They had crap tournaments as a conference, up and down. You know, Kansas, they got destroyed. They got embarrassed by Gonzaga. You know, TCU, I mean, just go up and down the board. And those teams are out too. So,
all right, let me pause real quick and tell you that at Ginger and Baker, March Madness is all about pie and whiskey. Whiskey Madness runs through the rest of March in the Cash restaurant. Come in anytime for a $16 blind tasting and vote for your favorite. You'll taste such great whiskeys and bourbons as Old Elk, Blanton's, Stranahan's, Woodford, and more. Votes will move the winning whiskeys through the bracket. If the brown stuff isn't your thing, for all you wine lovers, check out the Cash's award-winning wine list, where every Thursday they are half price. Come on by and try something new. Also, Pie Madness means free pie bites in the cafe and market, and a chance to vote for your favorites as well. The final pie sampling opportunity is this Saturday, March 30th. And don't forget the great comfort food classics available at the cafe restaurant. As you know, Ginger and Baker also features a coffee shop, market, teaching kitchen, event spaces. The place is amazing, guys. Support our friend Ginger Graham and treat yourself to a world-class experience at our favorite place, Ginger and Baker. All right. Pleased to welcome in interim athletic director and former founder, chairman, director. I don't remember what your title was, John, of the Green and Gold Guard. We last had you on, last June? I think early June, which almost 10 months ago. My, how things have changed. Would you ever have imagined that you were going to be in this position right now?
Absolutely not. But first of all, thank you for having me on. I can't believe it actually has been 10 months. It seems like it was more recent than that. But no, this is certainly not something that I envision in any way, shape, or form. But grateful for the opportunity to do this.
You want to tell how it kind of came about?
Well, it came about exactly how it was publicly reported, where, you know, President Parsons had made a decision that she wanted to do something different within athletics, and she called and asked if I'd be willing to help on an interim basis, and I said yes. You know, the opportunity to serve this institution in this capacity is something that I'm humbled to do, honored to do, and grateful for the opportunity to do it.
John, thanks again for jumping on with us today. Like we said, you've been on the podcast with us before. Could you remind our listeners kind of your background?
Sure. From a background perspective, so for starters, I am a Colorado State grad. So I'm an alum. Graduated from the College of Business here in 1991, and then my career took a path down the technical path, and spent time as a software engineer, as a leader in engineering, led me over into marketing and sales opportunities and executive leadership opportunities. And then eventually became CEO of a company. Most of that was on the or down on the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We spent a lot of time in Colorado. You know, that entire time that I was working professionally down in the Dallas area. As a matter of fact, we'd had a second home up here since about 2007. So, you know, coming up to games constantly, doing that kind of stuff, being involved with the university. And then when I sold that company back in 2020, we decided to move back to Fort Collins full time. And couldn't be more happy that we did that. Julie, my wife Julie's, have you know found opportunities to get herself engaged, you know, with Colorado State and in the community as well. It's just been a phenomenal opportunity and experience for us to get back involved with the local community and with CSU.
So you've been on the job for 5 weeks now. What has that been like jumping in with men and women's basketball and track and field finishing up, the outdoor track and field getting ready to start, softball, tennis, men and women's golf, as well as the spring season for volleyball, football, and soccer. So in 5 weeks, you've hit everything. What's that been like?
I have hit everything, and it's been great. So we call it crossover season, right? So where we've got some sports that are winding down and headed into conference championships, and we got others that are spinning up or in the middle of their competitive seasons. But it has been absolutely busy. It's been, at least half that time I've been on the road supporting different teams in their competitive pursuits. But it's been phenomenal. You know, it's been, very fast introduction to, a lot of our coaches are already new because of what I was doing prior to this. But, an opportunity to spend more and more time with our student athletes, our coaches, our administrators. It's been it's been a great way to become very, very, very quickly acclimated to what this department needs to deliver.
I want to ask you this because it's fresh on my mind. We just got back from Charlotte. You went to Dayton, went to Charlotte. Great run, by the way. I know that you are exhausted, but a little bit of a sour ending to the season. I mean, is just from the standpoint of it wasn't as good as they could have played in that final game against Texas. If we play our best, that's a team that we could beat. But when you look at that game, what were your thoughts as the season wound down, as well as kind of big picture thing with everything that the program accomplished this year?
Well, I think that's probably the more appropriate place to start is what Coach Medved was able to accomplish this year. He made a great run throughout the season. I believe we reached the highest ranking we've ever had as a program for men's basketball. And he did it with, a generational player on the floor. He did it with, an absolutely great roster of fine young men. It is so easy to be incredibly proud of the people that are, associated with that program, both in the coaches and with the players themselves. Got to the semis in the Mountain West Conference tournament, and then got selected to go to Dayton and won that game against a historically incredibly good Virginia program, and had the opportunity to go to Charlotte and play Texas. I think but I don't know if everyone knew exactly how all of that travel happened. We got selected Sunday night to go to Dayton. We're on a plane first thing in the morning on Monday morning, head up to Dayton, practice, play that game. And after we win that night, we get on an aircraft at about, was it 1 or 1:30 in the morning, and fly down to Charlotte, land probably about, I'm trying to remember here, probably about 2:45 in the morning there, get on a bus, get to the hotel, and our players probably aren't going to bed until 4:30 that morning. And then we play the next day against the Texas team. So, getting into that first four game while we're, incredibly grateful to be in the tournament there, that's a tough path to take to continue to win out and move through the bracket.
Yeah, especially when you look at playing three games in three nights less than a week prior as well. So
that was in total, I think it was five games and eight nights in four cities. I think we were back in, I saw someone post that we were back in Fort Collins for a total of 30 hours over the course of 2 weeks. So it was, there was a lot going on for those 2 weeks.
Want to ask you this as well. Hot topic. Nico's name has been mentioned in some jobs recently. It seemed like we dodged a bullet there with West Virginia with his connections there. Now you see some reports that Oklahoma State may be involving him in his in their search. I know President Parsons has stated her desire to keep him and will do everything she can in her power to do so. I'm sure you share that sentiment. What can be done to keep a coach like Nico Medved, if a so-called power conference comes calling, with the ability to triple a salary?
So, there's it happens for programs like ours that are at the G5 level. When you have success, other people notice, and that's the way it's going to continue to be. But at the same time, I do believe that we've got an opportunity to be a perennial power here as well. And when we look at that kind of an opportunity, it's something that is top of mind for President Parsons. It's top of mind for me. And we're going to be committed to making sure that we are competitive year in and year out. We have a goal of continually being in the hunt for a Mountain West Conference championship, and continue to be in the hunt for an at-large bid every year. And that takes resources, that takes effort, that takes a commitment, and that's something that we're willing to do from the president's office to the administrators to that coaching staff to make sure that we maintain that level of competitiveness.
From a NAL standpoint, which you're very familiar with in your old role, I was looking at this like, why would Nico entertain, aside from the obvious, more money to take a job coaching the Power Five? But probably the biggest thing for me, if I was a coach, was do I have the resources for NIL to make my life easier? Because I'm sure that's what most coaches are banging their heads against the wall at right now. You've set up a great collective with the Green and Gold Guard. I was looking at something that said the Oklahoma State's former coach said they've only spent $500,000 this year in collective money on basketball. So they're complaining there at very high levels. So do you think that that is something across the board, not just here, but that coaches look to potentially alleviate or lessen the pain and banging their head against the wall, having a tie into some more NIL dollars?
Sure. I think if you ask, just about any basketball or football or volleyball coach out there right now, and programs that have baseball and some of the other revenue and ticketed sports, any one of those coaches is going to say, I would love to have more NIL funds available for the teams. And at this point, we're going to see more of it into the non-revenue sports as well. So the impact that NIL has on collegiate athletics these days is something that cannot be ignored. It is something that is incredibly important. It's something that's incredibly important here at Colorado State, and it's something that that we are committed to supporting as well, making sure that our fan base, our donor base, understands what we really need to do to be successful at this level. And NIL is one of those, is one of those components that's incredibly important.
So I know a lot of our listeners know this. I've been given to the University of Wisconsin for about 15 years now, just a small donation. And this year I went to re-up just a week ago. And they did away with their Badger fund there. They had options where you could donate for your football season ticket seating. For women's athletics and to help them build a new indoor facility for football. All other donations, and this was on their official site, were said to go to their NIL collective. Now, obviously, this is a lot easier to do when you're getting $80 to $100 million from Fox and
Right.
CBS and NBC. But is this something that we're going to be seeing in the future here at CSU?
I think you're going to see not just CSU, but programs across the country trying to figure out how do they divert some of the discretionary funds that are coming in to NIL. It's also not going to surprise me here if potentially even by the time we get into the fall competitive season this year, this calendar year, that the NCAA will enable universities to directly compensate student athletes for the value of their name, image, and likeness. So, That's going to be, I think, a necessary and proper evolution of NIL is to bring that back in-house and inside of the universities, because it makes a heck of a lot more sense, in order to do it appropriately and to do it, being able to leverage all the university resources to get activities like that completed. So it's not just something here. I think it's going to be something we see across the country.
You think there would be like caps on this, or so that there's more of a level playing field, or is it still going to be?
Yeah, so my opinion on that. So that's, when we're talking about NIL, that's compensating players for the value of their name, their image, and their likeness. So that's not a pay for play type scenario. But if we get down the pay for play type scenario, then yes, I do think that there's going to be some kind of vehicle that that can be utilized, whether that's some sort of a collective bargaining agreement, whether that's caps on compensation, whether that's contractual limitations to transfers. There's going to be vehicles that that are going to be available to do that sort of thing. Yes.
Well, along the same lines, I mean, until something like that changes and it is brought in-house, I mean, you were obviously on the other side of this. Your sole mission in your Green and Gold Guard role was to raise funds for NIL opportunities for student athletes. Now you're on the side where you're seeing the finances and the funding needs of the department, the cost of running an athletic department. And I'm sure NIL still ranks very high on your list of needs, but how, if at all, has your change in roles affected your thoughts on donations to NIL versus the athletic department, scholarships? And then where would you recommend people donate their money when they're trying to, if they don't have the means to do both, one or the other, how would you tell people what to do there?
Yeah, so from that perspective, they need to give to what they feel comfortable with. So if you ask a lot of our coaches, they're going to tell you that NIL is going to be at the top of their list. So if they follow the coach's lead, that's where it's going to be. But make no mistake, we need operational, we need discretionary funds as well to operate this department. So my viewpoint honestly really hasn't changed from when I was running the guard to where I am now. Frankly, both are needed. And the other thing that that we very much need is that we need to be able to fill Canvas in the fall, and we need to be able to fill Moby for volleyball and our two women's our women's and men's basketball programs, because ticketing revenue also solves a lot of financial challenges. And if we figure out a way to consistently fill all of our venues, that's a phenomenal way to do it.
Now, I mean, we've talked a lot about NIL, and I know that you have such a great background, especially establishing the Green and Gold Guard here. I mean, just talking with a lot of fans, knowing a lot of friends, they're very hesitant to give to NIL. And I know that you and I had conversations. My own wife was like, "Well, why do we need to give to this? Maybe we should give to." And before she realized, like, this isn't just paying for play, especially the way that the Green and Gold Guard is set up. It's these kids are getting something from it, besides just money, right? How can we change, fans and donors' perceptions of the NIL and of collective like the Green and Gold Guard?
I think it's just constant communication, Mike. So that, making sure that that our donors understand that the university supports it and the university thinks that it's a priority. I think, number one, I think that's incredibly important. And number two, it is flat a competitive need at this point. The way that rosters are constructed anymore, the way that rosters are retained, the way that rosters are recruited to, it's just an important it's an important component of the overall ecosystem anymore. And it's something that is it's not going to go away. I'll tell you that. It is here to stay in some form or fashion. And supporting these student athletes as they represent the university is just as important as giving to the discretionary funds for the university.
John, so at the Colorado Golf Club event that you attended last month, which was awesome. It's great of you to come down. That was just a week after I think you took the role, you made a comment that you think in College athletics, the next 2 years is going to make the last 2 years look like child's play. And
I did make that comment, yeah.
I think you were referencing, the vast changes that we're seeing in NCAA conference realignment, NIL, transfer rules, all that stuff. What makes you say that? What do you envision happening?
It's all of what you just said there. So, the continued evolution of the relationship between universities and its student athletes, that's one. Since I made that comment, the NLRB ruled that the men's players on the Dartmouth men's basketball team are in fact employees of the university. Now that's being disputed by the university. I understand all that, but that's just another data point along the way of how the relationship between universities and student athletes is going to continue to evolve. When you look at conference realignment of what's happened here recently, when you look at what the college football playoff is going to start to look like and the potential of a couple conferences starting to separate from some of the other conferences relative to access to the college football playoff, that's going to impact revenue dollars across the board. We're going to see opportunities for revenue sharing from the broadcast partners and the streaming partners down to the universities and the conferences. It's just going to look, very, very different as things continue to evolve over the next couple of years here.
All right. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. You had the, golden touch to come into this role and all of a sudden earn us a couple of conference championships and then a national championship.
And a national championship, yes.
In the shop with.
Yeah, sure. So, incredibly proud of both those men's and women's track programs, with those indoor titles. The opportunity for Maya to go to Maya and Gabby to go to Boston and for Maya to win the women's shot, just a phenomenal accomplishment by that young woman, something that we're all incredibly proud of. And now they're there's no time to rest. They're into our outdoor season right away, and they're competing this weekend here in Fort Collins. So people that are around, come out and support that team for sure. It was a great accomplishment for Coach Bedard and that group, no doubt.
And then women's basketball obviously got off to such a hot start. You have one of the best players in school history there.
In the country this year, yep.
And in the country, yeah, for this year for sure. Getting no postseason kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth. That was a little disappointing. But what are your thoughts on the direction of women's basketball?
So, when I look at, a couple of these women's sports, women's basketball and volleyball, the growth in those two programs across the country is on a really giant upward trend. And, focus on, we've done a really good job historically with volleyball in terms of getting, folks into Moby. We need to work more on the women's side. We did have, the sellout that we did this year that was phenomenal. We had the education day when we filled that full of school children. And I don't know if either of you were at that game, but that was one heck of a fun experience.
A lot of screaming.
Yes. the uptick that we're seeing in support for women's sports across the country is happening here as well. And super excited about the future of all of our women's programs here.
Hey, we talked a little bit about this before we went on air, but you and President Parsons have really been everywhere on social media, representing at every event, just kind of a great face of the university, loud voice. Is this by design? Are you guys saying, hey, we need to make sure we're being seen? Or is this really just more of an element of each of your passions for CSU?
Yeah, I can't speak for President Parsons, but I can speak for myself. I don't know how else to do this job other than to be incredibly present. It's important to our fans. It's important to our donors, our sponsors, our student athletes, our coaches. We've got to be present for them. It pays us back in droves by being able to do so. We build relationships that, you're only going to be able to have by being heavily involved with those folks. And, I think it's more of a byproduct of who each of us are, and how we do our jobs.
How's it been working under President Parsons so far? She seems extremely invested in athletics, which is great for you and great for us. She seems to understand the importance of a strong athletic department for a university. What has it been like? And has she shared any stated missions or visions for athletics?
Yeah, so she's been incredibly supportive of athletics. Her support is, you guys see her. She's everywhere. And you know, the effort that she puts into being present, to being engaged with, you know, not just our athletes, but at the, you know, games with band and cheer and Palm and, you know, everybody. It's been a great model for all of us to see in terms of, you know, what you can really do when you get yourself engaged. So her support for athletics, I think it's fair to say, is unmatched, you know, from a president here at Colorado State. And you know, the future, I think, looks incredibly bright under her leadership here, not just for athletics, but for the university as a whole. You know, so she is absolutely dedicated herself to you know, helping Colorado State reach its full potential, and she's not going to stop or rest until she's done that.
Do you guys have like a shared mission for what athletics should be at CSU?
I think that's something that's evolving, something that we're working on. But I, you know, the way that I would describe it right now, and the way that I talk to the team here is have a winning attitude with literally everything that we do, and that goes beyond competition. That's with fundraising. That's with social media presence. That's with marketing. That's with the way that we, you know, run the finance side of the house. That's game day production. That's fan engagement. It's everything. We need to win at everything that we do. And by the way, we need to have fun doing it. You know, there is no better job on earth, quite frankly, as far as I'm concerned, than being involved in college athletics. There's so much energy around it, and we've got to make sure that we have a really, really good time doing this.
Well, that mission should extend to fan attitude, because sometimes we're a little defeatist, and would love to see that.
You know, And I know what you're referencing there, and you know, the thing that I hope everybody realizes is what a great place this is, and what a phenomenal opportunity that we have to be incredibly successful. It's going to take a lot of support to reach that, you know, the full potential for CSU athletics, but I'm in it. I'm deep in it. I see the opportunity, and I couldn't be more excited to, you know, to make this my day in and day out effort.
And speaking of that, and I know I asked you this at the Colorado Golf Club event, but do you want the permanent title?
You know, I want to do what's right for Colorado State. So, you know, I am always going to be in the CSU orbit no matter what. You know, right now we're just focused on competing and finishing these seasons, and then we're going to find time to, you know, to figure out what's the right next step for CSU. But I'm very dedicated to supporting Colorado State.
I knew that was coming.
So John. So John, yesterday the Pac-12 finalized their financial settlement between the 10 departing schools at Oregon State and Washington State. How closely have you been following this, and what discussions are CSU having about the future of the Pac-2 and the Mountain West?
So the Mountain West is in a really good position right now. So the way that the Pac-12 has dissolved, the opportunity to own the western half of the U.S. from an athletics perspective is highly available to the Mountain West right now. So part of what I did out in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago is that there was a meeting of all the athletics directors and the presidents as well. That was the topic of conversation. You know, the opportunity with Washington State and Oregon State, it's an interesting one. The opportunity with trying to reconstitute the Pac-2 into something larger is an interesting one. But frankly, the opportunity for the Mountain West is quite significant as well. You know, our media rights deal is up in another couple of years. You know, within about a year, we'll start to renegotiate what that looks like. You know, given the way that the landscape has evolved here, like I said, the ownership for the western half of the U.S. is wide open for us. So I think there's good things ahead for us.
Do you have any projections on what could happen after these 2 years? I know they're trying to, the Pac-2 is trying to buy some time, see what happens if there's any further shakeout. They got their Olympic sports going to the West Coast Conference. They got a scheduling alliance for football with us. Any thoughts on what you would like to see happen at least?
Oh, I you know, certainly would love to figure out how to reconstitute an autonomous conference in the western half of the U.S. and have Colorado State be a part of that. You know, I think that's, you know, you ask any Mountain West school and they're going to give you that same sort of answer. And whether that's with the Mountain West or whether it's with the addition of schools from other conferences, the way that a realignment is still coming, in terms of when you look at dominoes that may fall on the eastern half of the U.S. with the ACC, that may impact what happens across the country as well. So we'll see how that plays out, but. It's every school's goal to figure out a way to to find themselves into an autonomous relationship.
Well, after the basketball season that we just saw with six teams getting bids, that was great. But if you can keep some coaches around, this conference could really do something for the long haul here. And I personally would love to see some way where you could bring in a Gonzaga and just strengthen that, and then you do really own the West.
Absolutely. And by the way, we beat two of the Sweet 16 teams this year. Let's not forget that.
Yep, we did. Well, shifting to football, spring ball has started. What kind of conversations have you had with Coach Norvell? You kind of wonder if he was uneasy with the AD change. It was the person who hired him. That's probably natural. How is he? And what are your thoughts on what the football program can do this fall?
Yeah, Coach Norvell is doing great. So I've had a long relationship with him. It's been... ever since I was actually in the building day one when he walked in, so I've known him his entire time here at Colorado State. I've supported him in a number of different functions and will continue to do so. We're all incredibly bullish on the football program. So we've got was it back to back best recruiting classes in the Mountain West, those young recruits are starting to grow up and get a little bit bigger and stronger and older and faster. We certainly expect that that's going to translate to some on-field success as we get into the fall here. It's a great group of coaches over there. It's a great group of student athletes that they put together. Incredibly proud of the direction of that program for sure.
One last thing from the CGC event that you had said, you said that you've got some ideas in your head. Not a lot that you were willing to share quite yet, but is there anything you would be willing to share now on things that you would love to see achieved over the next?
Let's save that for another day.
Okay.
So yes, there are things that are rolling around in my head in terms of how we evolve. I think the biggest one that I'll talk a little bit about right now is going to be game day production. So, when we get to the fall and we get players back in that stadium and fans back in the stands, we want to make sure that we're doing this in a manner that is an incredibly fun experience for the fan base and the donor base. We really want to make sure that that we provide a very differential game day experience, and we also want that to translate to fans in the stands. We've got 36,000 seats in that place, and we've got to figure out a way that we regularly sell that venue out, because like I mentioned a little bit ago, ticket sales is a huge revenue driver for us, and by putting a good product on the field and putting wrapping a good a really fun game day experience around it, that puts fans in stands. We've proven over the years that when we've got winning teams, we show up to support it, and we need to do that this fall.
Well, you just kind of answered part of my next question. I was going to ask you, what do you need from us fans? And obviously, it's one of those things is to show up. What else do you need?
And that's a big one. And just let me be really clear on that. I need all of you, in Canvas and in Moby, for our ticketed sports. It makes a huge difference. Not just to the overall budget, but one of the things that actually wasn't talked about, when we did that sellout for women's basketball, is how much it meant to those players. It meant so much to the coaches. It meant so much to the players that they were able to, to compete in front of a sold out crowd. It's incredibly meaningful to them, and it was an incredible fun time for all the people that were there as well. So, getting people in there, that is top of my list. And then it comes down to financial support. That's no different than any school, any other year. You're going to hear the same thing. But supporting our teams, through the booster club, supporting our teams through NIL, I want to make sure people hear me say that. That's incredibly important to support that as well. It drives overall success and competition for us. And that is, that is certainly something that, that we are all focused on here, is making sure that we, that we regularly compete for championships in all of our sports.
One of the cool things of my last thing, last comments, not even a question, but I know that after we met at the Colorado Golf Club event, someone had asked about why can't I find more Ram merchandise and why can't I find players' jerseys? And I thought what was really awesome was 2 weeks later, they were at Moby and they were available in the Athlete's Thread store. And so you got some stuff done already, John. So I
Appreciate
appreciate
that.
that. Pretty awesome.
Absolutely.
All right, so I got one last question. I didn't get to ask you this last time that you were on with us. So I know you were down in Dallas Fort Worth area for a long time. I go down there pretty often. Or Tracy's brother lives down there, so we visit a few times a year. I asked this question, same question to Isaiah Stevens. Where is your go-to barbecue and fried chicken place in DFW?
So let's see, fried chicken would probably be Babe's if you've been to
Yes,
it.
based.
Yep. So
Love it.
that's a good spot, and probably Pecan Lodge for barbecue.
I've never been to Pecan Lodge. Every time we've been in Deep Ellum, it's been a line down the block.
Yep.
Been to Terry Black's a block away. But I love Babes. That's awesome.
Yep. It's
Great
good stuff for
answer.
sure. Yep. There we go. I passed the test on that.
You
Pass the
passed
test.
the test. Pass the test. Well, John, you're 2 for 2 in passing the test on our podcast experience with you. So appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for taking time. Thanks for all you've done so far in your 5 weeks. Great to see you on the road this past weekend, and a lot more to come.
You bet. Grateful for you guys having me on, and I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
See you. I finally got a call from a girl I wanna date.